Chapter 26. "Careful, careful," I urged uselessly. If the work crew had been excavating dinosaur bones with fine toothbrushes, they could not have been going any slower. Up in northern Maine, we have three seasons: winter, mud, and construction. After the ground thaws out and the frost heaves crack the roads, and then melting snow and spring rains undermine the roads and wash out the ditches and culverts, the beginning of May starts the cycle of construction season. Until the middle, or if we get lucky, the end of October, crews are out repairing existing roads, building new roads, fixing or replacing bridges. The first sign you are approaching a construction zone is the dreaded construction ahead sign, or its spawn of evil cousin, one lane road ahead. The first sign causes anxiety because you never know how far ahead the construction zone is, and sometimes you drive slowly until you come to an area where the guardrails on both sides are lined with orange cones or jersey barriers, and the road is all torn up and muddy with potholes, and there is a lonely backhoe awkwardly parked off to the side, sometimes with a once colorful but now faded beach umbrella on top to shade the operator from the intense tropical sunshine of the North Woods. But there are no humans in sight. For days, or weeks, you slow down approaching that spot, but you never see anyone actually, you know, constructing anything. Then, one day, the backhoe and orange cones and jersey barriers are gone. But the road is still muddy, with potholes bigger than ever, and you figure someone in the High Priest Temple of Construction heard a rumor of a snow flurry somewhere in North America and said, "Screw it, we'll wait until next year." Worse is the dreaded one-lane road ahead sign, because you can be fairly sure that sign means activity ahead that, while it might not accomplish anything useful, will block traffic. You creep up in a line of bumper-to-bumper cars to where some person in a yellow vest is playing a game on their phone with one hand while their other arm is lazily wrapped around a stop sign. Behind that person is a backhoe and a couple guys leaning on shovels eating donuts. You wait in line while traffic lurches slowly in the opposite direction, including some out-of-state asshole towing a boat behind their compact SUV, and they're going 2 freaking miles an hour because they don't know how to tow a trailer. Just when you're thinking you have four-wheel drive, and there is really no reason you can't put it in four-wheel low and cut across the potato field next to the road, the sign-holding guy looks up from his cell phone, startled because the walkie-talkie clipped to his vest made a noise. Then a miracle occurs, or the guys leaning on shovels need to cross the road to get to the box of donuts, because the sign swings from stop to slow, and traffic lurches forward triumphantly. Or it would, except the old school bus full of organic granola hippies in front of you got a wheel stuck in a muddy pothole, and it's staying in place while one tire spins furiously, spewing mud all over your windshield. Where was I going with that story? Oh yeah, at our construction zone, I was the useless asshole wearing a yellow vest, a hard hat, and a gosh-darned necktie, shouting at the people moving the 10-ton steel I-beam to be careful, as if that thought had never occurred to them. Duh. I was not wearing a necktie. I was wearing a powered armor suit like everyone else. Instead of construction, we were in the process of excavation, of digging an Elder dropship out from under a pile of dirt and rocks. Before Frey fell through the floor, Skippy had zero interest in the moon itself. He had concentrated all his efforts on scanning what was left of the Elder base. Because he found tiny pieces of Elder starships scattered across the surface of the moon or buried in the first meter of dust, he had not bothered to look deeper. Literally deeper. Like down under the first layer of dust and the dead lunar soil that our Nerdnik science team calls regolith, as if that matters. After Katie had her fortunate accident, Skippy had scanned deeper beneath the surface, at first in case there were dangers hidden beneath the base that might threaten Katie. Either Skippy had a crush on our athletic sport girl, or he was trying extra hard to impress the new crew members, because he broke his recent streak of distracted absent-mindedness and focused intensely on getting Katie out of her predicament. She was never in actual danger, a fact Skippy realized with what I thought was undisguised disappointment, because he did not have an opportunity to be a hero by saving her. The good news for both Skippy and his barrel of monkeys was the virtual model he slapped together to analyze the moon's subsurface yielded a happy surprise, a crashed Elder dropship that had hit the side of a lunar mountain, then got buried in the landslide. The dropship, technically a small starship according to Skippy, was in one big and many small pieces. What we cared about was the forward section that contained the cabin, where Skippy's scans indicated we should find several valuable pieces of Elder technology. Oh, and by the way, we also found the body of an Elder. It blew my mind when I heard that. Skippy's voice was shaken when he told me he had found the broken body of a biological being reclining on a couch, and since there were no other intelligent species in the galaxy back then, the body had to be an Elder. We had been to too many Elder sites in the local quadrant of the galaxy, even landed on the planet Gingerbread in the Roach Motel, and had never encountered a speck of evidence about what the Elders looked like. Now we had a dead one intact. That was why we were acting like Indiana Jones on the moon. Except there weren't any bad guys shooting at us, and instead of a cool hat and a bullwhip, we had powered armor suits and makeshift digging tools. Skippy had sent some of his dedicated cleaning bots down to do part of the work, and he demanded to come with them. I had vetoed that idea. Too many times the Flying Dutchman had gotten surprised, and I wanted our magical beer can with the ship in case it needed to jump away. The bots weren't especially good at clearing away moon dust. Static made the damn stuff cling to everything, so within 10 minutes, everyone's suits were surrounded by a gray outline as dust was repelled by our suits' electrical fields. Working at first by using our suits' power to lift away rocks, then with shovels, then carefully by hand, and finally by using brushes to ever so softly sweep away the last layer of fine dead gray soil and dust, we exposed the cracked hull of the crashed Elder ship. From Skippy's scans, we knew what it looked like, even when it was still buried. Sort of like the smooth, pointy end of an egg. He thought the entire ship had been like an almost featureless, elongated egg before it was shot down or whatever happened to it. There was no sign of the power unit that he thought had occupied most of the rear half of the ship. It had likely blown up. Instead of a jagged tear where the forward section had broken loose, his scans showed a smooth outline, which made him think the front section had been designed to physically separate in case of emergency. After we got dust and soil cleared away from the rear of what remained of the Elder craft, we set up a tent that acted as a decontamination chamber to clean dust off our suits before entering the dropship's cabin. One of Skippy's bots went first, running through the decontamination process, then waited for a second bot to be cleaned. The first bot was then meticulously examined by the second little robot while I impatiently waited for my suit to be cleaned. There was a beep in my helmet speakers when the process ended, and my suit was cleaner than when I had gotten into the thing aboard the Dutchman. The two bots were still fussing over each other, so I leaned forward and reached out a hand toward the smooth, silvery surface of the dropship's hull. "Skippy, I don't see anything like a door or even a porthole here. How can we get—"
"Do not touch that, you filthy monkey!" he shouted, making me wince he was so loud.
Pulling my gloved hand away before it contacted the dull, silver surface, I took a step backward. "Damn. Sorry, Skippy," I muttered, kind of pissed off at him. I know he revered and almost worshipped the Elders, but he had gone too far that time. My team may be filthy monkeys, but we were there, and we were alive, which is more than I can say for the supposedly great Elders. "Listen, I know the Elders were practically gods to you, but I'm getting tired of hearing humans are not worthy to—"
"Joe, I am sorry. I should not have said it that way. My bad. Yes, I greatly revere the Elders for who they were and what they did. Their accomplishments are still unmatched. And yes, a part of me feels horrible revulsion when I think of your species touching the remains of an Elder or one of their wondrous creations. However, the reason I warned you not to touch that ship is for your own safety. My memory has too many gaps for me to be confident I can anticipate how the hull of that ship might react to you coming in contact with it."
"Gee, Skippy." I leaned forward and peered at the silvered surface, which under magnification I could see was scuffed and dull. "React how? This thing is dead. It's millions of years old and busted."
"I am millions of years old, dum-dum, and I was sort of busted. Please allow my bots to take the risk. That is what they are for."
"Okay." I took another step back. Crap. If it were dangerous for me to touch the hull, was it dangerous to have my team anywhere near the thing?
"Wait."
One of the bots had begun scurrying toward the featureless hull.
Maybe we should clear out of here first. Us humans, I mean."
"That might be a good idea. It would have been a great idea for you to think of it an hour ago, dum-dum." We cleared out of the area. To be safe, I flew the Falcon over the horizon and behind a ridge, flying it in lazy circles rather than setting it down. If we needed to get away in a hurry, I did not want to waste time powering up for takeoff. Also, I ordered the Dutchman to maneuver behind the moon, and to save time, Sims asked Nagatha to perform a short jump rather than flying the long way through normal space.
"Okay, Skippy." I watched a view from one of the bots in my helmet faceplate. "Do your thing."
"How are your bots getting in there? I still don't see a door."
Elder ships do not have anything crude like a door, Joe. Their hulls had section of nanomaterial and fields where energy is held suspended temporarily in a material state. It is way too complicated for me to explain.
Yeah, I know. I sighed, knowing the entire crew could hear me. I'm a dum-dum.
Oh, it's not just you, Joe. Your smartest supposed scientists could not possibly fully understand the concepts of this energy-matter conversion. To break it down Barney-style for you, think of energy as water and matter as ice. Same thing in different states.
Oh, like, smooth and crunchy peanut butter, I guessed.
That drew a heavy sigh from his magnificence.
Yes, Joe, the peanut butter analogy is the absolute best way to explain it. If we ever meet the Rindaloo, you should impress them with your deep understanding of the subject.
You don't always have to be an asshole.
I will stop being an asshole when you stop being a dum-dum.
Deal?
Anywho, I am about to request the hull to form an opening.
Huh.
Well, darn it, looks like nobody's home. I'm not getting any response at all.
You were right, Joe. This thing is dead as a doornail. The matter has reverted to a fully solid state.
Even the nano appears to be inert.
Crap. Once the nano has gone without power for that long, the tetronic bonds dissolve and...
No point explaining this to you. We'll have to do this the hard way.
I did not like the sound of that.
What, pray tell, is the hard way?
Before Skippy could answer, one of the bots that looked like a green toaster with a bunch of creepy legs and tentacles stepped toward the hull, pressing the tip of a tentacle to hull surface. A door then opened on the top of the toaster body, and a second tentacle dipped inside, coming out with a nasty-looking thing I recognized as a sort of Theranin cutting device that Skippy had modified to make even more effective. A light flared as the tip of the device approached the Elder ship's hull.
"This is the hard way, Joe," he said as the little bot began cutting into the silvery hull material.
"I know what you are thinking, and don't worry, this thing is truly inert. At least the rear bulkhead is inert."
"You are sure that cutting torch," the light was flaring really bright as the bot cut away a circle,
"isn't feeding energy into that nano stuff? That the nano isn't gonna come back to life and form up into a monster that will destroy those bots, then come looking for us?"
"Please," he scoffed. "Little Joey watched too many bad sci-fi movies. If there is a totally unexpected reaction, you will be the first to know."
"Well, thank you so much for keeping me informed, Skippy. Your concern greatly warms my heart."
"Oh, I meant you will be the first to know because your Falcon will be the first target, but let's go with the heartwarming concern thing."
"Asshole," I muttered, knowing the entire crew could hear that also, and not caring. Nothing bad happened. In fact, several good things happened. The little bots cut a hole just big enough for the smaller of the two to slip inside, and we got a view of the cabin. That ship did not have a separate cockpit. The elders apparently controlled the craft with their minds, so no pilot console was needed. That explained why the body was in the second row of couches with no one up front. When I asked what the elders used as a backup in case their fancy brain control thing failed, he snorted that the brain control thing was the backup, that the primary control was an AI that responded to the wishes of the pilot. Then he relented and explained that elder pilots had a secondary backup control in the form of a holographic sort of console that would appear on command in front of the pilot. In fact, he saw evidence that holographic mechanism had been activated just before the crash in a last desperate attempt to avoid disaster. Clearly it had not worked. Much of the hardware of the dropship was fried and useless, made of exotic materials that had reverted to their mundane original state over the millions of years the ship was buried. When the forward section of the ship had separated from the power module aft, the maneuver had been violent enough to break loose things inside the cabin. Skippy thought the elder inside had sustained serious, possibly fatal injuries, even before the forward section plunged down to impact the lunar mountain. Unlike what he originally thought, separation had not been an intentional act by the pilot. When the dropship was attacked, the explosion had caused the AI to dissolve the energy bonds that attached the forward section to the doomed power module in a desperate and ultimately failed attempt to protect the pilot. When the ship smacked into the mountain, stuff that wasn't already flying free inside the cabin broke loose, including several unoccupied seats. Before the AI ceased to function, it must have diverted all available power to a suspensor field around the pilot, cradling that being in an energy field that damped motion down to the cellular level. That precaution had not worked either. The super-tough material of the hull had survived mostly intact, with only the nose shattered and the first quarter of the hull crushed in like an accordion. Anyway, the inside of the cabin was a mess, with stuff thrown around and jumbled together at the side of the cabin that was on the bottom when the tumbled dropship came to rest on the bottom of the mountain and got buried under the landslide caused by the impact. We, or technically Skippy's helpful little elf bots, did find some cool, useful stuff. The most important items were another comm node, a real zero-point energy power tap service, and what got me excited? Another wormhole controller module to supplement the one we had been using since our first mission. Having the last two items gave me an idea to bail us out of our current predicament, but more about that later. You have probably been thinking, Bishop, cut the blah 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 about minor crap you found and tell me about that Elder pilot! Whew! Okay, got that. Yeah, when Skippy's bots were crawling around in their creepy insect-like way, examining the cabin and stuff we could see laying in a jumbled pile, I was shouting at him to turn his attention to the barely seen form of something or someone in that second-row couch. He was reluctant to show us the body, and I understood his feelings. He did not want filthy, curious monkeys idly gawking at the broken body of a supreme being with our unworthy eyeballs. It's like why police cover bodies with a sheet, to respect the dead and prevent onlookers from satisfying their gruesome curiosity. It took a lot of talking for me to convince him that we needed to finally know what an elder looked like. Okay, so he turned one of the bots to focus on the Elder. Before he stunned us with the revelation that the crashed dropship contained a body of the ultimate senior species, I had not recently given a lot of thought about what the Elders might look like. When we were on Gingerbread, I kept hoping to find at least bones, or a statue, or even an outline carved into a rock. At that point, I would have been happy with a crude drawing of an Elder on a bathroom door with a sign like, "Garmagel Eats Chuda." We did not find any amusing signs scrawled on the bathroom door of the dropship. In fact, the little craft did not have any sort of washroom or galley that Skippy could detect. So we had to satisfy ourselves with seeing the broken body of an elder. Whatever I thought an elder would look like, the reality was different. From old sci-fi movies, I had a notion that the more advanced a being was, the more it would look like little green dudes like the Theranin, or the creepy humans with giant heads who worshipped atomic bombs in one of those Planet of the Apes movies. As beings became more advanced and less reliant on physical size and strength, they would become smaller and softer. What we saw was not like that. This elder was 8 feet tall and heavily muscled. Its head had a bony crest with backward-pointing spikes, its fingers ended in long claws, and its snout was long and full of sharp teeth. The snout wasn't real long like a crocodile, more like a dog, but overall the thing was vaguely reptilian. The elders kinda looked like what the Krestang might like to evolve into someday. "Holy shit, Skippy," I said when I was able to stop holding my breath from shock. "That thing, I mean, that elder, looks like a gladiator." "Were they all like that?" I asked, thinking maybe there were multiple types of elder, and the one we found had been genetically modified for military service. If so, it might not have needed a power-assisted mech suit. Its muscles looked like they would be enough for super feats of strength and speed. "Oh, sorry, that was a dumb question. You don't have any other elders for comparison?" "It was a dumb question, Joe," he replied in the hushed tone he had been using since his bots entered what he considered the holy presence of an elder, even a dead one. "However, I have enough information from a DNA scan to determine that, yes, what we are seeing is the base configuration of an elder."
Base configuration?
When he said that, I had a mental image of an elder that could remove its arms to plug in custom attachments like weapons or a weed whacker. That image almost made me laugh, which would have greatly offended Skippy, so fortunately I bit the inside of my cheek to stifle my mirth. Elder biology does not utilize DNA the way humans think of the term. However, they do have complex chemical strands that determine how their bodies process energy and grow. Their DNA equivalent could be modified by interaction with nanoscale implants at the user's desire or requirement.
Whoa. That blew my mind. They can, like, make their arms longer to reach something on a shelf above their heads?
It doesn't work that quickly, dum-dum. He dropped the reverent hushed tone and went into full snarky mode when disparaging my intelligence.
Duh!
For example, if an elder were to visit a heavy gravity planet, it could adjust its DNA ahead of time to grow stronger bones and muscles. Or it could, I guess, grow gills to breathe underwater.
Wow. Muscles and bones stronger than what that thing... Sorry, that person Already has?
Correct, Joe. The biological bones of that elder are merely a framework for a much more robust composite structure. If it were not for the reinforced structure of his body, I suspect that even with the suspensor field, the body would be in many small pieces.
Him? That's a he? A guy?
Yes, a male. Elder biology was based on gender binarism, in the strictly reproductive sense of the word gender. I can tell you that, based on my analysis of this body's biochemistry, their females apparently were the same size and basic configuration.
I would not like to meet either of them in a dark alley. My shoulders shuddered involuntarily. Those claws, dulled by extreme age, still looked like they could slice me open.
His body is well preserved, I noted.
It is. The cabin was exposed to partial vacuum, and the nanomachines woven into his biology have largely prevented decay.
Joe. His voice switched from my helmet speakers to the earpiece, indicating he was speaking on a private channel.
Please tell me your intentions regarding this elder.
You mean, do I want to bring him aboard the Dutchman?
My mind had been racing on that subject, trying to judge the alternatives.
No, I do not.
Skippy, I think we take the stuff that you think is useful, then your bot seal that hole and we leave him there in peace.
Thank you, Joe, he said with almost a sob. You are a good person. I am proud to be your friend. It would have bothered me greatly to bring the victim of this crash back to Earth for curious humans to gawk at him.
I agree. Part of my reason for leaving the body there was because I thought seeing it would cause panic on Earth. Plus, if authorities on Earth really wanted to closely examine the corpse, they would have to send the Flying Dutchman back out.
Going back to Earth is a long way off. We still need to stop those Maxulk ships.
That dropship doesn't have any weapons we could use?
It does not contain anything like a weapon at all. Sorry.
All right. Wrap it up at your convenience, okay?
If Skippy wanted a moment alone with the body through his little box, I wanted to give him all the time he needed.
Thank you, but I'm good, Joe.
His tone was a bit louder and reflected his disappointment.
We have found everything there is to find here.
Hey, we found more than we expected.
A lot more.
Sure, I guess. We already have a wormhole controller module, and all the comm nodes we've found so far have been inactive.
We now have a spare wormhole controller and a super-duper elder battery thing.
Plus, you don't know this comm node is inactive. Maybe this one is working just fine.
The comm node was like the others we had found, inactive. Or it was unable to connect to the network, or the network was down, or Skippy didn't know how to use it. To spare his feelings, I refrained from asking whether maybe he was talking into the wrong end of the thing, or maybe it needed to be plugged in, or if there was an instruction manual lying around somewhere. Best would be a YouTube video where an elder shows how to properly use a communications node, but that is too much to ask for. The comm node was bad news, but that was no big deal. We had stolen or found inactive comm nodes before, and Skippy had not been looking for one, so he was not disappointed when our latest acquisition wasn't functional. The other two items got me very excited.
Skippy, the wormhole controller works okay, you sure?
I can't be absolutely 100% sure until I try to monkey with the wormhole again, which, if you remember, is what got us into this mess.
I do remember.
Why do people like to remind you of stuff you already know? That they know you know? Especially when the thing they are reminding you about is one of your major screw-ups?
How confident are you that it works properly?
Oh, supremely confident. I have connected to it through high space-time, and it responded perfectly.
Joe, there is something we should talk about.
Can it wait like 10 minutes? I have to secure the Falcon.
The dropship was in its docking cradle, but there were a lot of steps I needed to perform to make sure it was shut down properly and ready for the next flight.
No, it can't wait, and don't bother shutting down. In fact, send someone to my man cave to get me. We need to go on a road trip.